I am recording.
Oh, you are recording. Are you? And I didn't hear it say recording.
Yeah, no. Maybe on the Mac, you just—it's just tough.
Like so many things. Yes. Okay. So, for the dear listeners, dear listener, probably. I've got a Mac, which Andy hates.
Hang on, we haven't started yet. Have we started?
I thought you were recording.
I'm recording.
Okay.
But we may not have started yet. Should we start? We could have that in if you like.
Well, Should I start again?
No, I have to start the program. I'm joking.
Go on then.
Okay, hold on.
Yeah. Are you having a gather moment?
Yeah, I've just forgotten what episode. I went and looked at what episode it was, but I've forgotten again. And I've forgotten what it's called. Okay, there we go.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Hello. You're such a pro.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Hello, welcome to Season 1, Episode 6 of Good Robot Andy's. My name is Andy Balaam.
My name is Andy Cockerill.
And the film we're going to be talking about today is...
Society.
And I have to reveal to you, dear listener, that I've already seen Society, although I saw it a long time ago.
Yeah, I've seen it very recently, so...
It's an exciting film. I'm excited to have seen it.
Although we will discover, as we frequently do with things like this, particularly when we're discussing movies that are not the movie that we're talking about, we will discover whether we're actually talking about the same film
or
a different one.
I think my summary of the plot would be, I'm not going to tell you the plot because that would be a spoiler. Now, during this podcast... We will obviously completely spoil this film and hopefully some others.
Yep.
But that doesn't mean that I have to spoil the spoilers that we're going to have later.
That's true.
Suffice it to say, you'll watch it for a long time not knowing why, and eventually you'll find out why you were watching it.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable.
Now, but just before we get to that, apart from discussing how you've now got a Mac, so everything's just tough. we should also deal with the extensive feedback that we've received since the last episode.
Yes, so
perhaps you could do that, Andy.
Well, we've received precisely no feedback since the last episode. However, we very briefly you and I did talk about addressing one of the issues of the movie Under the Skin.
Basically, we're giving ourselves feedback, effectively.
Effectively, yes, we are.
Let's do that.
Okay, so what we wondered was, there's a scene in Under the Skin where, I'm not going to go into any plot details, I'm just going to leave any new listeners completely cold and in the dark here. But there's a scene in Under the Skin
Back and listen to it.
Go back and then come back and... You know, we'll talk about this particular scene. There's a scene where Scarlett Johansson, who is an alien wearing human clothing and a kind of human skin, picks up a man who is facially disfigured in order to take him back and eat him, basically. But she doesn't. She either takes pity on him, which I'm not sure is maybe correct, or she doesn't recognize him as being a human like the other humans that she has. And we just wanted to talk about how that kind of feeds into our human feelings about people who are disfigured in a way.
Yeah, I mean, the question is the whole film about how we're all really inhuman, just like her?
Yeah.
And how awful she is and we are? Or is the film, I was left not really knowing what it was about.
Yeah, it's a really, really great film. I think if you haven't listened to the previous podcast, go listen to it, then go watch Under the Skin. Or actually, no, watch Under the Skin first, because I do spoil the movie, as I do all of them.
Not like me. I'll be... I'm having all my movies spoiled for me.
Yeah, all of them. All the good movies ever.
But I do know that at some point in the history of this podcast, the future history of this podcast, Kenneth Branagh will be tuning in.
And he will hear you say that you don't like him very much.
In order, we need to keep referring him back to the episode in which I apologise.
You apologise in episode 2.
Oh, is it episode 2?
Okay. I think so, yes. Because, he's a jolly nice chap.
Yeah, he seems lovely, and I like his beard.
His beard is fine. Yeah, he's got a fine sort of gingery beard, hasn't he?
Fine. Yeah.
I shouldn't even know what colour it is. I've got a bit of a man crush on Kenneth Branagh. Anyway, on to today's movie, which is called Society.
Presumably is a costume drama of some kind.
Well, I think, are you thinking of High Society?
I may very well be.
Okay, well, it's not that. So this is a movie that was directed by a guy called Brian Usner, who was one of the producers of another movie that came out actually came out before this film, but this film was made before the other movie. The other movie I'm talking about is Reanimator. Which,
I think I've heard of that.
Okay, well, Reanimator, we could probably talk about that in a future podcast, but Reanimator is one of those sort of classic cult horror movies. So Brian Usner was one of the producers of Reanimator, and he made this movie called Society, which is a very strange piece of work. In the way that you described it, in which you watch it and you're not really sure why you're watching it, and then the climax, you realise, oh yeah, no, I get it.
Yeah. Although you may still wonder why you had to sit through so much pain in order to reach the climax.
Well,
I think you did.
I didn't actually find it to be all that painful. I found it to be quite insightful. In fact, extremely insightful in many ways about how stuff works.
It's very bitter, isn't it?
It's extremely bitter. So before we get into the...
Yeah, we're doing the analysis before the plot.
Yeah, we need to talk about the plot. So there's a young man. His name is Bill Whitney, and he is played by Billy Warlock, who was in apparently in Baywatch back in the day, but I don't know. He is sort of like a pretty typical teenager. You know, he's a bit grumpy and a bit hormonal and all those kinds of things. And he feels different from some of his schoolmates, and he feels very different from his parents, who, you know, Billy Warlock looks like a kind of dark-haired, olive-skinned guy, and his parents are very much Anglo-Saxon looking people. You know, they look very different from him, and he feels very different from them as well. And one day he discovers an ambulance, and people gathered around the ambulance, and the ambulance folks are putting a body into the back, but he can't see who it is. He can't see what's going on. And then he starts to think that something's up when his arch enemy at school, there's a guy who is his arch enemy of like debating class and stuff like that, who is a posh kid, should we put it in those terms?
Yeah, and we should say also that our protagonist is also a posh kid. This is a posh family, a posh school.
Yeah, although Bill Whitney is not, although he's from a posh family, he doesn't seem particularly well-to-do in himself. But so he is at odds with all of these people. But then this guy at school says, I've got something to tell you. You need to meet me tonight. And when he goes there, he finds this guy mutilated in the car. He runs off to find the police. And when he comes back, the car and the body are missing. But there's a different car in their place. So he starts to think that he's losing his mind. And when he gets back to school, this guy, whose name is Petrie, he shows up alive and well. So Bill really does think that he's losing it. And then at the climax of the film, Bill attends, or not attends, but he finds a large formal party at his home. And it is revealed to him that all of the people that he feels out of step with, i.e. his parents, even his sister, all of the folks at school, all of the people who are in positions of authority and power, are not actually human. They're actually some kind of strange, either space aliens or sort of strange mutated people who suck the nutrients out of humans' bodies and kind of morph into each other. A bit like in John Carpenter's movie, The Thing, where things kind of join together and it's all sort of a gloopy, horrible mess. And it's it is one heck of a climax to a movie.
Yeah, and they reveal that they adopted him at an early age in order to basically grow him as meat.
Yes. Yes, it's there's an incredible scene where Bill pulls his father's head through his father's own bottom, turning it inside out.
I'd forgotten that, yeah.
And his father says, "Look, Bill, I'm talking out of my ass." Basically. I think I can probably say that on this podcast. I just did.
You just did.
And he escapes, and that's the end. And it is, I found it to be an astonishing piece of work. It's sort of anti-establishment and acerbic and angry, really, really angry. I mean, I think that Brian Usner, as in the way that he's portraying, you know, people who are in positions of power and authority, has had a rough time at the hands of people who are in positions of power and authority. And, you know, if you're a struggling filmmaker, that's most studio bosses and agents and people like that. And this film just seems like a massive, massive two fingers to everyone who's ever, you know, not given him what he wanted, that he thought, you know, these people, for the sort of high-level gatekeepers of society, this film is, it's an incredible piece of work.
Yeah, my interpretation of the plot is that all of the rich are actually these creatures.
Yes.
So, in a way, they are human. They're just, there's, you know, it's like in The Time Machine, you know, there's just two forms of human. There's the ones that feed on the lower ones, and there's the lower ones.
Yeah, and you can, you know, you can take that, the allegorical, you know, this is allegorical sci-fi horror, you know, it's in its best form. And it's, when I reviewed it on my radio show, I compared it to another film of this era called They Live, which was directed by John Carpenter, in which...
That's the one with an exclamation mark in the title.
I think it might be, yes. I think it might be, in which our protagonist, when he puts on a pair of pretty ordinary-looking sunglasses, he sees the world as it really is. So he sees billboards that have, you know, signs for soft drinks. Instead of having a sign for a soft drink, it has a sign that says "consume," or a sign that says "obey." And when he looks at some people, they look like space aliens, and in fact they are space aliens, and that they are farming the human race for food.
Right. Very similar idea.
Very, very similar idea. But differently executed in the way that John Carpenter does it. But if you look back to the 1980s in the United States, a very, very polarized country. You know, you had the haves, you know, the yuppie haves who had worked, well, maybe not hard, but they got lucky on the stock market or something like that, and they had a lot of money. And you had the have-nots in the United States who had almost nothing. You know, we're living from paycheck to paycheck, or possibly, you know, in massive debt. And you can see where these stories come from.
I think one of my abiding memories of it, you were just bringing it all back to me while I was listening to you.
Yeah.
Is that he, you're kind of in his head.
Yeah.
And he just feels like things aren't right. And then weird things definitely do happen, so he's got some reason to feel that things aren't right. But then he... when anyone he encounters is really subtly, really dismissive of him.
Yes.
I'm thinking of particularly, he goes to see a psychiatrist because he's worried that he's getting paranoid.
Mm.
And the bloke just sort of doesn't care. It's really subtle the way it's portrayed. And that's because, obviously, he is just me.
Yeah. What's interesting about that is that because he's a teenager, when you're a teenager, you feel like you are out of step with everybody else who's not also a teenager. So it very cleverly plays on that paranoia that you have. And I remember feeling like this when I was a teenager, that the world doesn't understand me. Like, everybody else who's not like me is an alien. Right. That's what it feels like. So the film plays on that, and it convinces you, the viewer, that nothing's wrong.
Yeah.
Until some strange things start to happen.
Certainly. I mean, the actual end is just a massive shock.
It's nuts, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's absolutely nuts, the ending. It is... I think it's one of the most incredible pieces of visual effects.
Yeah.
You know, I'd compare it to The Thing, which is again an amazing visual effects movie of real practical effects. But, you know, there's no CGI in Society. It's all practical effects, and they're all really, really good.
It's all, like, it's probably like pig jelly or something smeared over.
Oh, it's just, it's revolting. Yeah, it is revolting. And I think that this concept of class war was alive and well in the 1980s in the United States. And I think that these days in the United States, it's probably less so, but in this country, it's alive and kicking again. And as I was watching Society, I just thought, this is kind of like how I feel right now. I won't really go into any more about that, but but it is certainly the case when you look at what people get up to who are in positions of power, compared to what people get up to who are not, is just amazing, really, what they get away with.
Yeah, I mean, certainly that feeling, the feeling it has is the same feeling of, that there's a certain section of society who just go to the right schools and run the country, and that is very much what it's playing on. There's no chance you could ever become part of that world, you know. This guy gets as close as you can, which is that he has the same education, the same set up, but the fact is,
he's not one of them.
He's lived with them all his life, lived in their home as their son.
Yeah.
And they still see him as meat.
Yeah. Yeah. It is angry and paranoid.
Yeah.
And you could probably, I don't know what it would have been like watching it in the 1990s or the 2000s, whether it would have had the same power that it does now. Maybe it would, but I think as a piece of allegorical sci-fi horror, it's one of those films that will probably last forever because its message is universal.
Yeah, you know, I presume I watched it in the 90s.
Yeah,
I have a very weird relationship with this and a couple of other films.
Oh yeah, what are the other ones?
Well, I'll explain why, and then I'll try and remember the other ones.
Okay.
My friends and I had a band at uni in which I did computers, and they played actual instruments.
Mm.
And our music contained samples of films we liked.
Yeah.
Instead of vocals, really. And so one of our songs has several samples from Society in it. So I've listened to various quotes from Society too many times. but yeah, so that means it is, every time I listen to anything like that, it brought it all back to me, so I can remember it better than most things that happened in the 90s.
You just reminded me, actually, there's a over the, it's either the opening credits or the end credits, I think it might be the opening credits, there's a fantastic version of the Eton boat song, which changes the words to make them really subversive. You can find it on YouTube. I played it on the radio show, actually. Played the whole thing. That's really worth a listen, because it is one of the most subversive things I've ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I can't remember any of the... I can't actually remember any of the words that are changed, but go check it out. It's really worth a listen. So
there's one particular quote from Society. It's when he's with the psychiatrist.
Yeah.
And the psychiatrist just says to him, "Don't you think that sounds a little bit paranoid?"
Mm.
And that's one of the samples that we use. So.
That's a good quote. Yeah.
The other film that we had one song that was just samples from was Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh, yes. Not the first one.
I think the first one. And there's a bit where Freddy goes, "I'm your boyfriend now, Nancy."
I know that one.
Yeah.
That's good. A great movie. That's a really great movie.
Yeah, it is really good. I can forgive all the other films because of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's very sad that Wes Craven died quite recently. When he was still fairly young.
He made some other good Freddy films.
Well, he reinvented, the landscape of the horror movie two or three times in his career.
Yeah.
You know, he was a real visionary. No, Nightmare on Elm Street, then Scream.
Yeah, which is brilliant. And
which is absolutely brilliant.
Underrated now, I think, after being overrated at the time.
And then he made Wes Craven's New Nightmare, which is one of the most meta, screwed-up films I've ever seen, I think.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. And that was underrated then and remains underrated.
And then he made a... more recently, say in the last 10 years, he made a sort of 80-minute exploitation movie, essentially, called Red Eye.
I haven't seen that.
Which is really good. It's set on a... Most of it's set on an aeroplane, on a transatlantic flight. And is to do with a couple who are sitting next to each other, one of whom is a bad guy. And that's really good, Red Eye. So, you know, it's short and to the point. Mm. I think we can... Society, I think we can probably wrap it up.
I liked New Nightmare. I know that this is the tangent that took us here is almost impossibly thin, but I liked New Nightmare, and there's a lot of films that are set in the making of a film that I like.
Yeah,
I would just like to mention Staten Maine.
Oh, I love Staten Maine. Actually, you introduced me to Staten Maine.
Did I?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I'd never heard of it before.
The particular bit of Staten Maine I like a lot of bits.
Mm-hmm.
The particular bit I like is they have a car crash, and he's on drugs.
Yeah.
And he gets out of the car, and he's okay, and he says, "So that happened."
It's really well delivered, though, isn't it?
I love that line.
Yeah. But are you still there?
I am.
Yeah, okay. The quote about what do you do for your assistant instead of giving her a raise? You make her an associate producer.
Yeah.
Is true.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. That's what happens when you can't give people a raise. You say, "Well, do you want to be an associate producer?" It doesn't actually mean you're doing anything or have any responsibility for anything, but it just sounds good.
I had the feeling, a very dangerous film that, it was letting some of the secrets out.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely. I think so.
Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, that's a good movie. So, yes, Society, I think, I think probably a little known movie, little seen, probably maybe seen more than Under the Skin. Possibly.
Yeah, probably will be in future.
Probably will be in future. but a very, very strange film nonetheless.
Yeah, I mean, you don't forget it. I mean, if you think about how much enjoyment you get out of something, we often have this conversation about computer games, you know, like a movie lasts you an hour and a half, and computer game costs a lot of money these days, but you can get hours and hours out of it. But if you include the amount of time you're going to be thinking about society and remembering it after you've watched it, it's worth a lot.
Yeah, it is worth a lot. I'm just looking at the. I'm doing a man at home looking something up on a computer, but it was finished in 1989, but it wasn't released until 1992.
Right.
And I'm not really sure why that was. Well, I watched it on a restored Blu-ray quite recently, which looked fantastic. I mean, it probably looked better than it did at the cinema when it was first released.
I don't remember it looking very good. I'm sure I watched it at home.
On videotape.
On some rubbish TV on VHS, yeah.
Yeah, no, it looked amazing. Really, really stunning.
Interesting.
Yeah. It is a look at, you know, it's a look at, I think to wrap up, I'd say it's a look at social politics of the 1980s in the United States, but is totally relevant to, you could probably watch it in Brazil or Argentina or this country.
Speaking of Brazil, I really like Brazil.
Yeah.
But anyway, and Brazil also rails against the evils of the system. But
yes, it does. It does, yeah.
Is that you answering my question, which is, what's the point of it?
Yeah, the point of it is it's an allegorical sci-fi horror about how the rich are eating us alive.
But why is the world better? Because it exists.
Well, I think the world is always better if some kind of allegorical story exists, because it allows people to get a handle on something that maybe they're not aware of, or maybe that if you were to write a full-on, straight-down-the-line story about how the rich have got it in for us, we just say, yeah, I know that. But society presents it in a way that makes it relatable.
Yeah.
And I think that's... and it's quite funny as well. You know, it's. Yeah. I think what I'm driving at is in the way that, say, a documentary maker like Michael Moore shows us how stuff works, and he does it in a funny way, and that makes it relatable and makes it, you know, it sort of lifts it shows you what's behind the stage, you know. That's what Michael Moore does, is he strips away all of the artifice and says, okay, this is how the world works. And he does it in a funny way. And society, you know, allegorical stories do it in that, do something in that way.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Sorry, go ahead.
It leads me to wonder.
Yes.
Is the world a better place after you have emitted a howl of rage? Which I see this film as.
Yeah.
A howl of rage.
It is a howl of rage.
Probably the world is a better place after you've emitted a howl of rage.
Well, I think that, you know, watching this film is not going to change the world. You know, making this movie didn't change the world. But I think that if the viewer can get something out of it, then maybe they could be moved to do something small, or maybe something big about it. About inequality, which is basically what this film is about. Yeah.
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 And it's just, yeah, it's unforgettable.
It is. Once seen, never forgotten. That shot where his father's head appears in a place where it shouldn't be is unforgettable. It's incredibly funny, but at the same time incredibly just wrong.
Yeah, it's the horrific realization of how alien these people are.
yeah.
to us. The rich are just a different species.
Yeah, that's right.
And the horror of that, and how they see us as nothing.
Yeah. Interestingly, Mark Kermode called this movie stupid yet brilliant.
Interesting.
Which I think is a fair, I think I said, you know, it is very stupid, but it is also utterly brilliant.
Yeah, and you watch it and you're just really confused. I mean, obviously, anyone who's listened to this won't feel that, but I remember watching it and just thinking, I just don't know what's going on.
Yeah. No, I'm just reading the IMDb, the Wikipedia entry. And it's quoting Brian Usner, who's saying that it was shelved for 3 years before getting a release in the US. So it was released in Europe in 1989 and did quite well. But in the US, it did absolutely nothing. And he says, he said, I think Europeans are more willing to accept the ideas that are in a movie. I think that a lot of kids who maybe went to see this in the United States were probably the people that it was pointing the finger at.
Right.
And they didn't like that. Yeah. I could be wrong about that, of course. Or maybe they just thought it was incredibly stupid.
Stupid, but brilliant.
Yeah. There we go.
Cool. Well, if you have any comment on Society, either having seen it or not, send us some feedback.
Yes. Yes, please do. We want to, you know, if you've seen it or you feel moved to see it, then that would be awesome.
Yeah, do watch it. And if you have watched, read Far From the Madding Crowd, just in case we promise that we'd do it, maybe we will do it sometime.
I think we are going to do it sometime.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, I think we should.
And then it only remains for us to plug some stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You go ahead and plug first.
Oh, shall I? I'll plug first.
Okay. You plug first.
Yeah. You go to the Android store and buy a game called Rabbit Escape, what I wrote. It's a bit like Lemmings. You don't have to buy it. You can download it for free from the website. Google for Rabbit Escape. You should find it. Also, if you go to the Good Robot Andy's website, there are links to cool open source programs, my blog, YouTube videos about programming and stuff like that. Some of it for people who've never programmed before, some of it for people who've been programming for years. Yeah, go to the Good Robot Andy's website. You'll find links.
Yes, lots of links. Okay, so my plugging is for a radio show that I present on Glastonbury FM every week between 6 and 7. That's you can find that online, and there's also...
Between 6 and 7 on what day?
Oh, sorry, on a Thursday. Yeah, thank you. There are podcast highlights. If you search for Movie Mashup, that's one word, on your podcast app or software of choice, you'll find it. It's also on iTunes.
Well worth a listen.
Thank you.
And, we have been the Good Robot Andes, and because the Good Robot Andes is a sufficiently unusual, obscure reference, if you Google for that, you should find us fairly easily.
Go us.
Go the good robot
us.
We'll see you next time.
I was trying to explain that reference to my wife the other day.
I'm not even sure it exists. I may have just made it up.
No, it does. I'm sure. Maybe we've coined Go the Good Robot Usses.
I feel convinced it's in the film, but I'm the only person I've ever met who remembers it. I desperately searched YouTube to find it, but obviously no one liked it as much as I did and made a YouTube video of it.
I played the full version of God Gave Rock and Roll to You on the show a couple of weeks ago, the one with the massive guitar solos in the beginning. And it was incredibly enjoyable.
It is, and it fills up a lot of airtime.
Yeah, it does. It's really long. Yeah.
Cool. That's your lot. See you next time.
Yep. See you. Bye.